Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, many women who go through childbirth in Ireland feel their preferences are overlooked and their voices not heard when decisions are made. Well, a new report on birth in Ireland has highlighted concerns around informed decision-making, patient choice and autonomy in maternity care. And joining me now is one of the authors of this new report, Dr. Suzanne Huschke, Research Fellow in Social Inclusion and Health at the School of Medicine at the University of Limerick, a participatory health research unit. And thank you very much, Dr. Huschke, for being with us this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning, and thanks for having me on the show.
Now, tell us a little bit about why the study was done, who took part in it, because it's not a traditional piece of research.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a participatory health research project. That means some of the people who are affected by these issues are a part of the team. So we have a team that's made up of midwives, doulas, those are non-medical birth support workers, and service users. And we got together and looked at the maternity system in Ireland and decided we want to do a survey, an online survey, and ask people who've given birth in Ireland between 2018 and 23 about their experiences. And the survey was very successful. We had 2,500 people respond to the whole survey and others who responded to parts of it. So we have a good sample size, and we had people respond from all over the country, people who have given birth in any of the 19 maternity units across the country, as well as people who give birth at home.
Mm-hmm. And we know that routine interventions like inductions and C-sections, they are commonplace in Ireland. What was the experience of the women that you spoke to in general terms, according to your findings?
Yeah, so it's really important to highlight that, of course, experiences are very different, you know, different for different people. And we did have people say that they were happy with the care that they received, that they had a positive experience, and that they were happy enough to go along with some of these interventions. Yes, so those are not the people we're worried about. That's great. If you had a positive experience, fantastic. But there is also a cohort of people who were telling us in the survey that they felt they were not being listened to, and that they felt some of these interventions, whether that's an induction or an episiotomy or a vaginal exam or a C-section if you have a breech baby, that they didn't actually have any choice, that there wasn't any alternatives presented to them, and that as a result, they did not feel listened to.
Mm-hmm. It can be difficult to ask questions, though, and ask about alternatives when you're in labour and you're in a hospital. Would people have appreciated the opportunity to be more informed and to be able to ask about alternatives?
Yes, so that's a really good point, because you see, the thing is, it's not actually on the women, on the birthing people, to be asking these questions. We have a very good national consent policy. That's an HSE policy that states clearly how people need to be involved in decisions around their health, including during labor and birth. And that policy says very clearly that people need to be informed about the benefits of something, obviously, like why do we want to do this? The risks, what are all the risks involved, and the alternatives. And that's the part that we found in the many stories that women shared with us is often missed, that, you know, interventions are not presented as like, this is what we offer, this is what we suggest you do, and here's the alternative to it, which may be a different intervention or no intervention at all. And it really is on the healthcare provider, as per this policy, to be presenting all this information. Mm-hmm. And that's what we found in the survey, is that in many cases just doesn't happen.
But I suppose, you know, and I don't know if this came through in this research, that these women are in the care of healthcare professionals who they trust and they believe are acting in their best interests and the best interests of the baby. Does that form part of the reason why they don't question these decisions?
Yes, absolutely. So I think that's part of it. But it is also, we also have to look at what kind of maternity system do we have? And it is that the vast majority of people give birth in hospitals. There are very few other options available to women. So it's also that everybody's just used to the fact that, you know, you go into hospital, everybody's used to having inductions, everybody's used to that so many people end up in C-sections, so that many women just aren't aware that there actually is a choice involved in this. And as I said, the care providers don't often, don't always share all this information, mm-hmm, with women.
And women told you as well that they weren't sure at times what was happening or why it was happening. I mean, that's a very easy fix, isn't it? To have a longer conversation with somebody before a procedure begins.
Yes, you would think it's an easy fix. Now, I'm not sure it is because it is so ingrained into our maternity system, but we definitely need to start working on this more. So there are, you know, there are interventions that are quite intrusive or personal. So, for example, vaginal examinations, right? 92% of the people in our survey had vaginal examinations at some point during labor. That is pretty much everybody, right? Vaginal examinations are not evidence-based. They are, in the vast majority of cases, not backed up by research. They do not improve the outcomes for babies and mothers. In the vast majority of cases, they're done anyways. And what we found most concerning is that many, many women do not know they can decline this. So 2 out of 5 respondents said, I did not know I can decline a vaginal examination. That is really, really worrying because this is a very personal interaction with somebody. It, for example, for survivors of sexual violence, and we know that 1 in 4 women have experienced sexual violence at some point, this can be very triggering. And if women then don't know they can decline this, that is a non-consensual interaction. And this just really isn't good enough. Mm-hmm.
So they feel like there isn't a place to say no.
Yes, exactly. That is. And that's it. And again, if we look at the consent policy, if we don't know we can say no, then our yes doesn't count. That is the definition of consent, is that you have to be aware and you have to be supported and respected in declining something. Otherwise, your consent is not valid.
So did you see different outcomes then, depending on where people were giving birth? For example, in private care or home births, were there different outcomes?
Yes. So, I mean, overall, these issues do stretch through the entire maternity system, yes, but there are differences in the care pathway. So in the home birth schemes, we see that women overall feel a lot more heard and they feel like they have a lot more choice and their choices are respected. And to an extent, that is also the case for private obstetric care in hospitals, which obviously you're probably going to opt for if you want a more medicalized birth and maybe, you know, an elective C-section. And that's fantastic. If you feel that's where you're in the right place and you get in the care you want, fantastic. But then there's the vast majority of people who give birth in a public hospital system. And that is where we see that these issues around consent, decision-making, respect for the women is lower.
Mm-hmm. And then it's really interesting as well to note that women who are having their first babies often feel disenfranchised, more so than people who are having subsequent children.
Yes, that is a really worrying thing because what we hear, so we had nearly 12,000 free text responses. Yeah, so there's various questions in the survey. So we have loads and loads of stories from women. And it is quite heartbreaking to hear somebody say, in my next birth, I'm going to do this differently because now I have the information. I had a traumatic birth the first time around. I was not listened to, but I've gone away and looked this up and I won't be doing the same thing again. And we would really, really like to prevent that from happening the first time around. Your first birth is such a special moment and it sets you up for the entire journey of parenting. So the fact that the intervention rates are significantly higher for first-time mothers, so there's more C-section, there is more inductions, but also their experiences of it tend to be more negative because they haven't been around the block yet. And, mm-hmm. and that is just not fair on them.
I mean, I don't know if you've managed to ascertain this because you're asking women who are giving birth these questions as opposed to the medical profession. But you do hear mm-hmm. when first-time mothers go in and they have their birth plan and they'd like everything to go this way, is that viewed almost naively by health professionals? You know, is there a view that, well, you know, things will change as you go through, you won't get everything that you want because we will have to do interventions depending on how this birth goes?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I remember a sign from one of the hospitals that where it was up in the antenatal ward saying, you don't need a birth plan. You know, you basically like forget about the birth plan, something along those lines. And there's two things here. So first of all, birth, of course, is unpredictable. That's, you know, we never know exactly how it's going to go. But to say to women, it doesn't matter what you want, because we're going to have to do certain things in certain moments, that's just factually incorrect. Nobody has to do anything. And there's always a choice. And what we're hearing in those stories in the survey is that women feel that what's presented to them is like, no, no, but we have to do a vaginal examination. Otherwise, we can't let you into the labor ward. That is just not right because mm-hmm. you can't, that's coercion, right? Or we have to induce you because you're over 41 weeks. No, nobody has to do anything, and women always have the right to say no.
But if your baby is in distress, and if either you or your baby are at risk, surely there will have to be interventions, even if the woman who is about to give birth doesn't want that intervention to happen. If it's a question of saving a life, surely that intervention is needed.
Well, so in our experience, obviously, if the baby is in danger or the mum is in danger, the vast majority of people will want the intervention, right? Because that is obviously at the core of the decisions that they're making. However, what we do see is that it is often not correctly presented to people. So the risks of not doing an intervention are often overstated. So the words that women used in the survey were like fear-mongering, feeling pushed, feeling pressured. So the language that's being used around this is quite emotive and scares women into accepting interventions that possibly in that situation were not evidence-based. So it's a lot more nuanced than you would think. And I would say probably most birthing people will agree to an intervention. For example, if you have a uterine rupture, you will need a C-section. That saves a life. There's no question about that, you know. But there's a vast amount of other interventions that aren't as emergency as that, and where the information just isn't presented in a balanced way. And it is still up to the woman. That is the other point. It is always up to the birthing person to make any kind of decision about her baby and her body. And that is something that has just not registered in the culture of the maternity service.
Suzanne, explain obstetric violence to us. I know you didn't ask questions about this, but your answers that you got back fitted the description.
Yes, exactly. So we weren't asking questions about it because it's a very direct way of asking. Obstetric violence is any kind of verbal, physical and sexual violence experienced by people as they are accessing the maternity service. And this, so it isn't just violence that they experience in interactions with doctors. It's anybody who's working in the maternity service. So this can include midwives, nurses, anybody. And examples of that, one huge chunk of it is the non-consensual intervention. So anytime when a woman feels like she didn't have a choice, she wasn't actually listened to, she was coerced, she was bullied, she was threatened, that are examples of obstetric violence. And we didn't ask direct questions about it, but again, in the 12,000 free text responses, there is so many examples of this. Mm-hmm. There's so many stories. And this sometimes is quite drastic scenarios that women were describing, like being held down by a doctor to put a cannula in, even though they said they don't want it. Like that is physically holding somebody down to put a needle in. And or scenarios where somebody had said, I do not want my waters to be broken. And then a vaginal exam was performed and the waters were broken in the process against their will. So things like that are quite drastic examples, but it's also very commonplace, kind of more subtle forms where women are neglected or not listened to, saying I'm in pain and nobody checks on them for hours, things like that. That's all obstetric violence.
What do you believe needs to happen now as a result of what you found in this study?
Yes, so we as a team of authors, there's a good few things that need to happen. But if we could start somewhere, starting with consent would be a really good idea. So if we actually came up with some sort of training or interventions to implement the consent policy. So the policy is actually quite good. It's very clear on the autonomy of the patient or the service user. It just doesn't translate into practice. So that would be a good starting point for educational measures in the maternity system. We also see that we do need more choice, more different care pathways. So you see the maternity strategy from 2016, that's nearly 10 years ago, was promising a lot about choice. You know, an expansion of the home birth service, standalone birth centers. None of this has happened. Here in the Midwest, in Limerick, where we are, we haven't had a home birth service in 2 years, and there's no discussions around reinstating it. So we need more of these options for women so that they can choose the care provider that works for them. And if they choose hospital care or private care, great, but the alternatives to that just aren't available. And then the last bit that we are really, really trying to get out there is that we hope this report gets read by a lot of women, by a lot of birthing people, and by midwives to remind everybody that consent is important. You have a right to make decisions about your body, about your baby. And midwives, they are needed to support these kinds of decision makings where there is respect for the autonomy of the birthing person.
Okay, well, we did ask the HSE about this. They said they did their own national maternity experience survey back in 2020. Well, it was conducted by HICWA for the HSE. And as a result of that, they have put in place these postnatal hubs in 13 maternity service providers. They're doing a second national maternity experience survey, which is in development, that will run in 2025. And that will inform the future direction of the HSE's maternity services. But Dr. Suzanne Huschke, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.